Good afternoon, everyone. Let's start our regular monthly communications and legislative liaison committee meeting for May 8th, 2025. Madam Clerk, please have roll call.
Roll call, Director Tran.
Here.
Director Yeo. Director Sheldon. Director Mesqua. Director Wiegand.
Here.
Director Green.
Here.
Director Jung. Director Nguyen.
Here.
Director Meeks. Director Bilodeau. You do have a quorum of your committee.
Very well. Thank you so much. Are there any items received too late to be agendized today?
There are none.
Okay. Moving on. Are there any participation by visitors via Zoom who may want to speak?
No hands up.
No hands up. Okay. Thank you so much. Next item is consent calendar.
Move it.
Okay. We got a motion to move. Any second. We have a second. Please call the roll.
Roll call, Director Tran.
Yes.
Your right hand?
Yes.
Director Green?
Yes.
Director Nguyen?
Yes.
Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
That motion passes 5-0.
Thank you so much. Easy peasy. Next item is a state legislative update. Who do we have today for that? On calendar.
I can't see.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Okay.
Not a problem. Good afternoon, Director Tran and members of the board of the committee. Jason Gonsalves. I'll start off and then turn it over to Don and or Jason to fill in anything I may have missed. Just high level, because as first, I should compliment the staff report. Your management team did a very good job. There's 9 bills, as noted in the report. 6 of which the district supports, 3 of which the district is opposed to. Most, with the exception of one bill you supported pertaining to open meetings, has moved out of the assembly by Blanca Rubio and is over in the Senate. The other 8 bills are pending in the appropriations committees in their house of origin, meaning the assembly bills pending in assembly appropes, Senate bills in Senate appropes. I would just couch that, you know, given the appropriations committee process, the House of Origin is typically a little bit of a easier test, if you will, because it's, you know, they still have to pass the second House Appropriations Committee. But there's an overarching, I'll call it a dark cloud, as it pertains to the state budget. Today's news is they're projecting an additional $10 billion, could be up to $20 billion budget deficit. Obviously, California is reliant, if not heavily reliant, upon the highest earners, the wealthiest taxpayers. The first quarter of the stock market probably hasn't been great for many of those. So we're projecting uncertainty, but also, as it pertains to the June 15th budget, another $10 billion hole. All of which is to say the Appropriations Committee process may become even more difficult than perhaps it already has been historically. I will note, by way of process, any bill that has a projection, and you know this, Director Tran, from your time here in Sacramento, any bill with a projected cost in excess of $150,000 is automatically placed on suspense, and then they have to come off of suspense by May 23rd. So between now and May 23rd, we will know the fate of the 8 bills that are pending in the appropriations committees. And then the ones that are successful that move off of appropriations will move to the assembly floor or Senate floor. They're in the House of Origin. So, and that has to happen by June 6th. So in summary, one bill on open meetings has passed out of the House of Origin. The other 8 are pending in the appropriations committees. And we will know their fate between now and May 23rd. So with that, I will stop there and happy to turn it over to Don and Jason and or answer any questions you may have.
Don and Jason, do you have anything to add?
As usual, Jason has stolen the show and has done an excellent job giving an overview. We're happy to answer questions as well on either, you know, everything Jason has said or on the bills themselves. Thanks.
Any comments or questions from directors, members? Seeing none, I do have one short question. There are two bills that were set for hearings, two specific bills, one from Hurtado and the other one from Caballero, both Senate bills, set for hearing on May 5th. What were the fates of those two bills specifically?
Both of those bills did go to suspense.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, I should note, Jason said I stole the show, but in California, stealing is not illegal, so that's permissible. I'm kidding.
All right. But if your bills is on suspense, you're in trouble.
Very much so.
All right. Very well. Moving on, if there's no other questions or comments, moving on to item 3, federal legislation update.
Thank you, Director Tran. So I've got a couple of things I'll go through very quickly. First, on reconciliation, you've read the newspaper stories or seen the internet stories. The House continues to wrestle with trying to get to yes on budget cuts. They will get to yes, but at this stage of the game, it's going to be a little bit more of a winding road beyond Memorial Day, which is what the Speaker had hoped to secure. I think for final action in the House and then move it over to the Senate. There's a couple of things that I would highlight, though, that has happened in the last week that is of interest to you folks. First of all, the Committee on Natural Resources completed action on their reconciliation package that will become part of the larger bill. They included $2 billion for water storage north of the Delta. You can read that as Shasta and other projects, storage projects in Northern California. They also included $500 million for conveyance south of the Delta. That's real money. It will survive any final reconciliation package. So there'll be $2.5 billion that theoretically, if not in reality, California can lay claim to for those types of activities. The second thing that occurred in the Committee on Natural Resources markup was a provision to allow project sponsors, irrespective of the project or the statutory authority to engage in developing infrastructure projects, anybody who would be willing to pay for the environmental studies, i.e. if the water district wanted to take on the responsibility of paying for environmental study, an environmental assessment on a project, you could do that. There'd be defined deadlines for project review and approvals by the federal agency. And at the end of the day, those reviews would not be subject to judicial review, expediting the study process that has oftentimes been used to delay project construction going forward. That is perhaps a more problematic provision, making it through the Senate, because the Senate has rules that basically say you have to be able to show a bright line between what you're trying to do and impacts of a federal budget in order to be part of the reconciliation package. But right now it's in the House package, and we'll see what transpires. Moving on from reconciliation, the 26th budget that the president submitted to Congress last Friday, it is called a skinny budget because the details aren't great. It's a sort of an aspirational budget. It's traditional in the first year of a presidential term that the president puts together a limited budget because there isn't enough time to put something together. Overall, the president's asking for a $200 billion additional cut in domestic spending. For your purposes, what the president's budget requests is an elimination of federal contributions to the State Revolving Loan Fund program, which funds water infrastructure. And the premise and the background on that request is as follows. The administration says that this program was meant to be a limited program of assistance to help states set up their state revolving loan fund programs, which would be into perpetuity paid back by project sponsors in low interest, by interest and principal paid back to the state revolving loan fund program. I think the message I would leave with you is the response that request got from the committee on appropriations in both the House and Senate leadership. They said, basically, the president may propose such actions, but I think the president needs to know that Congress makes a decision on what the funding should be with respect to specific programs. And I would say in tandem with that statement, the Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works had a hearing on how to reauthorize the State Revolving Loan Fund program and in general what to do now that the bipartisan infrastructure law is entering its final year of funding. And so I think you can say that there is strong interest in the delegation, in the House, in the Senate, to continue the federal contributions and support of infrastructure assistance to state and local communities. So I think we'll see that just evolve over the next several months in the FY26 spending bills that are dealt with by the Congress. And then I just want to quickly move over to PFAS, because we did have the administrator of EPA issue a set of guiding principles, if you will, for PFAS actions by the agency. But I think what you want to know is that the administrators, we'll call it a roadmap from the Biden roadmap revisions, but it generally is very similar to the Biden roadmap for PFAS, with some very important distinctions, the emphasis of what the administrator wants to focus on. For our purposes, we now have for the first time ever an agency head saying he wants to work with industry and Congress to essentially rewrite the CERCLA liability provisions related to PFAS to give you folks protection from potential liability based on the designation of PFAS as a hazardous substance. That's really huge, because we haven't had an agency head say that in the past. The Biden administration basically said to Congress, hey, we designated this substance as hazardous. Law doesn't give us any flexibility. Sorry. Now we have an agency head say we want to fix it. There's a whole host of issues that we provide to staff that the administrator identified. The other thing I would like to suggest is that the administrator wants to work on science in developing regulations and standards for PFAS control, treatment, and disposal. So I think that is a positive sign going forward that he's going to use validated science and will probably impact what happens with respect to the court case that's pending right now on the 4 parts per trillion treatment standard for water protection issues. So we're looking forward to at least a reset in how the agency goes about developing standards and making certain it's based on not only validated science, but also current science. And then finally, I would also say with Zeldin, he wants to plug dollars into technology on improving, shall we say, the suite of technologies that might be out there to manage PFAS, both from a treatment, destruction, and disposal. Those are all some of the top line issues of importance, and you can see more of what his issues are. As I said, we provided the overall statement from the administrator to staff earlier. Finally, I would just like to talk about reductions in force and the ongoing reorganization of the federal government. In the next few weeks, we will finally see how serious the reductions in force are within the various federal agencies. Top line, though, we will see significant reductions, but in areas that we're concerned about, specifically on rulemakings and standard setting for pollution and water treatment standards and maximum contaminant levels. Bottom line is this. The administrator of EPA has said he's eliminating the Office of Research and Development, the Office of Science and Technology. Those are the offices that conduct the sort of basic science in establishing the basis of going forward on rules like the MCL for PFAS. That is not necessarily bad. What the administrator wants to do is return the agency structure to the Reagan era, which is each program office in this case, the Office of Water, Office of Drinking Water, that they have the people within those offices rather than having doing the technology work, doing the research work, as opposed to having them off in another part of the agency as a separate office. So I think what you're going to see is greater communication, interaction by the personnel that are involved in both doing the research, doing the technology, the science that sets the standards, and that the folks in the program office use to develop the regulations. So I would not say it's necessarily a bad thing that the Office of Research and Development or the Office of Science and Technology are being restructured or maybe eliminated and putting those folks into the various program offices at EPA. It might bring greater efficiencies and greater sort of comprehensive interaction by folks that are working towards the same end and be more responsive to stakeholders like yourself. So the only other thing I wanted to point out is we are looking at trying to identify a time in July for a DC visit by the district based on the issues that are pending in the policy arena. And the reason we're looking at July, we want to let Congress get through the reconciliation process, which should be, if not totally wrapped up, pretty wrapped up by July, so that members, if we're visiting them, can focus on the issues we want to talk about rather than being so wrapped around the axle trying to get the budget process finalized and done so they can deliver a package to the president that he can sign into law. So, Chair, that is it right now. Happy to answer any questions.
Really quickly, the July visit, usually they take their summer break as well. So after the 4th, are we talking about the last week or you're not sure yet?
So I've got to look.
Usually it's a month break. I remember.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Chair. So they're out. You're correct. They're out for a week, if I remember correctly, for July 4th.
Yeah.
And then they'll come back and then they go out July 28th for the August recess.
Yeah.
And so we're looking at that window of the 2 to 2.5 weeks in July.
Okay. Very good. And thank you so much.
Chair, if that doesn't work for your schedule, we can look at latter part of June.
Very well.
I've got a
thank
question.
You so yes, please.
Eric, is there any chance that EPA will look at the MCLs for PFAS and change those? Is there any chance of that?
Yeah, there is. I'm going to be a little bit fuzzy on it because you have the pending court case that was launched by National Association of Manufacturers, I believe, Association of Metropolitan Water Agencies, and the American Water Works Association, questioning the economics as well as the science underpinning the 4 parts per trillion number. EPA still has a few weeks to review how they want to go to the court because they're under new management, obviously, to defend or not defend the litigation that was launched. Once they make that decision, I think they're going to straddle the middle road and they may go to the court and say, can we have some time to reevaluate the science? Can we have some time to look at the economics, the costs of compliance, and whether they pencil out, if you will, under the Safe Drinking Water Act provisions of taking economics into account? So I think, Director Green, that we could have a situation where the committee, where the EPA will try to sort of slow walk the effective date of compliance and end up at a different number ultimately. I would say parenthetically that AWWA did send a request into Lee Zeldin to extend the comment or compliance date beyond 2029, so and to issue a rule to that effect. So we're watching it.
Good. So there was a 60-day stay on that litigation EPA asked for. Then they asked for an additional 30-day stay.
Oh.
But that is going to end, I believe, next week, potentially, Eric.
Yes.
So we may learn something at the end of next week on where the EPA is going to go. So
yeah.
Might find out something.
Yeah, I'm being told that there are changes coming, but I
say, if you want to play this, Director Green, if you want to play this out, sort of the worst case scenario, you have some environmental groups as formal interveners in the litigation. So they could tell the court, we're tired of this. Let's go to trial. And if that happens, then EPA will have to either defend their position or fold up their tent. I don't see them folding up their tent. I do see, as the general manager was saying, that they're gonna have to give an answer to the court by May 12th.
May 12th, okay. Knew it was coming.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Anyone on Zoom raising their hands?
Oh, I know. I do have another question. I know this is out of the water, but on the budget reconciliation and everything, I've been told that the real holdup is Medicaid funding. Is there any change in anybody's, in any of the camps, to start moving?
So bottom line is this. I try to give your member, Young Kim,
mm-hmm.
I give her credit. Not only did she solve the Corps of Engineers dilemma for you, but she's been fighting tooth and nail, leading the fight on the state and local tax deductions and trying to raise it from the $10,000 threshold. That's one of the $10,000 threshold. That's one of the things, aside from Medicaid, that's stopping things from moving forward.
Oh.
So on your question on Medicaid, they're still wrapped around the proverbial axle. And as far as the SALT deductions, they are still fighting that fight. We'll know next week. Ways and Means is supposed to go to markup, I think, Tuesday or Wednesday. That's where we'll find out what happens with all this. And can I just say one other thing before, Director Tran, before I say I'm done, I'll be quiet. You may hear stories about the efforts to eliminate the deductibility of state and local tax-exempt funding or bonding. I don't think ultimately it's a real threat, but it's a big price tag of revenue lost to the federal government. And if they can't solve the problem with Medicaid cuts and things of that sort, they might start looking at trying to, if not, I don't think they can eliminate it, but constrain the availability of tax-exempt financing. We're watching it closely. The Government Finance Officers Association is taking the lead on this. But I just passed that on as an FYI. I don't want you to set your hair on fire, but I want you to know about it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much. No other questions or comments. What's the pleasure of the committee? No action. I don't think we need to. There's a lot of pending stuff. We can for the board hearing. I think we can hold our breath for another 2 weeks. I'm trying to save some trees.
Long time to hold your breath.
Just trying to save some trees. If that's okay, I'll move on to. Thank you so much, Eric. Appreciate
thank you, Simon.
Presentation. All right. Informational items. Item 4, Children's Water and Education Festival recap.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Tran. So the Children's Water Education Festival was hosted on April 23rd and 24th. So thank you to all the directors that came out. And it was a really successful event. So we have Danny Birch here. So congratulations to Danny for leading a successful festival and to all of the PA staff. It's a really big lift. So we work on this for months. So Danny can share this. Yes. And as she's sharing, I will highlight that we do have, since COVID, we've been working on really ramping up the numbers and participation. So you'll see that we've increased kind of participation and money across the board. So it's a good thing. Do you want to minimize them?
Yes.
Well, thank you, Gina, for the introduction, and thank you, everyone. So just to recap some of the stats and some of the highlights from the 2025 festival, as Gina mentioned, it was just a couple of weeks ago, and we were able to welcome almost 6,000 students through the event. And that brings us to almost 160 students that have attended. This was the 28th year of hosting it. So a lot of students that have been able to experience this event. So we're very excited about that. This year, we hosted it at a new location, Oak Canyon Park in Silverado, and it was very successful, as Gina mentioned. So we were able to welcome both public, private, and even some homeschools to the event this year. And as far as our student numbers, like I mentioned, we almost had 6,000 students come, and this was an increase from last year where we had closer to 5,000. So since COVID, we've been building the numbers back up. And that was 225 total classes that attended from 70 different schools, and that represented 19 different cities across Orange County, with schools from every single director service area included in the event. As far as our volunteers and presenters, they really make the event possible. So we were really excited to have almost 500 total community contributors that consisted of staff leading 60 different presenter booths, as well as hundreds of volunteers. And OCWD hosted booths representing different departments. So we had 8 different booths from various departments that you can see there. And we also were really excited this year about our sponsorship. We raised over $100,000 in sponsorship, which was a big increase from last year. Not only do we have the supporters that come year after year, but we were able to tap into some of our vendors that we're currently in contracts with. So luckily we have a lot right now. So we reached out to them and we were really overwhelmed with the positive support that they offered. So that really helped with that increase that we saw this year. And we wanted to show just a 2-minute video that kind of recaps the event and shows the magnitude of the overall event. So,
oh, there's no sound to this video.
I apologize to those online. I'm not sure that we shared the sound. There was music going along, so hopefully you could hear that. If not, we're adding some final touches, and we'll share that as well.
No, there's no sound, and that's what Director Trout is saying. There's no
sound. Sorry. We were hearing the sound, so I didn't hear anyone say that there wasn't sound. I apologize. We will share the video once we're adding like a conclusion slide with our logo and everything. So we will be sure to share that once it's finalized. But hopefully it still captured the event so you could see what happens at the festival. So additionally, we just wanted to share some testimonials that you can see here. We are still receiving survey feedback and some more testimonials. Overall, very, very positive, including with the new location, a lot of positive feedback for that as well. And then we were also very excited to have some visitors. So thank you to those that were able to attend, and just thank you to everyone for the support leading up to the event. So overall, like I said, a big success. So moving forward, we're just continuing to do some closeout items. Like I said, looking at survey results, we've sent out thank yous to all the different participant groups and just finalizing where we are with the budget for this year's festival. And then always looking ahead to the next year. So already starting on planning for the 2026 festival. So that's kind of where we're at. So unless there's any questions.
Do you like the new venue better?
It was nice. There was a lot of benefits.
Yeah, I think so. I think that the biggest benefit is, well, that the kids get to see the water, the mountains, and all that. The only, I think, downfall to the event is the distance, right? And then cell phone coverage, right? But but everyone just, they loved it. We didn't hear any negative comments. It was more from the planning team that we were noticing, like, oh, okay, schools are getting there a little bit late. We're having to leave a little bit early because it takes a little bit longer to get back. So we're going to work with them and the busing companies to see if we could find that sweet time for, you know, arrival and departure to maximize their education.
So the distance you're talking about is
to Silverado Canyon,
not the physical distances.
Right. No. The actual site is so great because it's privately owned. So we don't have all of these restrictions that we did at UCI or at a public park. You know, we can ease of setup. I think Mayhol's team, who helps tremendously in bringing all of our stuff over, they loved it because we just had a lot more flexibility. And I would say this year, more than any, we got more positive comments than any other location.
Yes,
presenters loved it. You know, even our staff loved being out there. Yeah.
It was overwhelmingly positive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And I would like to introduce, if I may, the opportunity to introduce Michelle Diaz.
Hi, Michelle.
Michelle's the newest member of Public Affairs. She comes to us from the city of Buena Park, and she will be leading the festival starting this week. She already started. Disney was very, very pleased. I would say they love this location. We already have a meeting with them in about 2 weeks or so, and they're already looking at getting AT&T to partner with them and to bring in like an extra tower. That's how I understand it, for like cell phone coverage and all of that kind of stuff.
Wow. Okay.
So they loved it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And are they bringing swag and everything?
They are. Yeah. So they provided a lot of the decor. They did a lot of the signage. They help with all of the bags that the student gets, the teacher bags. They are a tremendous support. Yeah. I think it brings a lot of value to the event.
Yeah. Right. I attended both days of the festival, and I wanted to commend the staff and the volunteers for putting such a successful event together. It was a nice, very nice venue, actually, despite the distance and the lackadaisical cell coverage. But the environment is just beautiful. The kids were very excited. And there were plenty of wing space for everybody to spread out. And especially with three large, huge booths, venues by Disney. I think that really kick it up a notch for the kids. So congratulations on a good job.
No, we had a life.
We had lifeguards and everything. Yeah, thank you for attending.
Yeah, and just to add to that, Director Meeks had mentioned last night at the board meeting, kudos, and reminded me that I should give kudos too. Obviously, having twins who were at the festival, I got that firsthand experience being out there to see them, but a couple of parents had come up to me afterwards and said they do a lot of field trip, you know, chaperoning.
Yeah.
And they said that this was completely organized, that there was never a worry with so many kids, but the kids getting lost. It's always on the top of their mind, running off. And she said the way that it was so smoothly timed between each segment, it gave the kids an opportunity to kind of stay together, but it was very organized. So they were very impressed with the organization. But my class, or the students from our school, were late. They missed the first one by about 15, 20 minutes. But their school starts at 8:35, whereas this event starts at 9 or check-ins at 9. So the distance coming from Newport Beach made them late. And that's, you can't time, because some kids start their class at 7:45. Some start at 8:35. So it's your logistical issue that is on us, not on the district. So it's just, I think you're just going to always have that.
Yeah, and I know we talked about that too, Unite Festival. And I think what we're going to try to do more is just reach out to the individual schools and the district and try to kind of adjust. Over the years, we've adjusted our start time. So like we used to have three start times, and we used to give, at one point, we used to give them an hour to like arrive and check in and all that. So we'll kind of try to work with the buses and the schools.
And I don't think that's on you. It's on the school. It's very challenging for this many students, many students.
Yeah. But I think where we get concerned is on the presenter end. We don't want them all waiting there and they're set up and they're taking, and then they have no shows like the first, you know, so we'll work it out.
But very well organized and tons of positive feedback from the parents who are
That's
the chaperones.
Right.
Thank
That's
you. Great.
Bringing your dreams. Yeah. We do have a very cute picture of you with your kids.
So.
Good job. Good job. Yeah. All right. Any other comments? Input. Moving on to outreach report.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Tran. The outreach report is in the packet, but I do have a few slides to highlight some of the accomplishments for this past month. So our media outreach was over 13 million. We continue to grow our social media followers, and Crystal and the team continue to create more followers and more engagement. And then also we continue our tour program. We hosted about 185 guests, and we continue to have our virtual tour program. So we have a technical about 20-minute video and then a general video about 10 minutes. And we continue to get a lot of hits on that. We wanted to show, I believe it was Chair Tran who asked at a prior meeting, kind of to go over a little bit more of the website analytics. So we've listed here just kind of our top 10 pages that we have. And I would note, like where you see the Lisa Haney bio, it really depends on the time of year we look at it. So Lisa, in a particular time of year, may be doing a lot of speakers, you know, opportunities or panel presentations. So folks are looking more at the bios. But really these top five really continue to be, I think, the most visited page, the careers, GWS, meeting agendas, RFPs, and about. And then here we have kind of how did folks get to the page, whether they did a search or a direct. So kind of shows here half and half between search and direct. And then we're showing our top 10 countries that visit the website, most of them, over 90%, being from the U.S. And I did want to note, I don't know, maybe Crystal next month or so, we'll be able to show a new look on our homepage. We've been working with IS to kind of roll out some things, so we will have that soon. And this is our newsletter. Just wanted to show that it continues to do well. We send it monthly to about 300 or 3,000, excuse me, and 500 people, and we feature a president's message and just some of the highlights and top activities that occurred that month. And we continue to have an open rate of 41%, which is above the average. Also wanted to note that the district received two awards for the Next Generation Water Leaders video and then for our campaign on the outreach for the Prado Bald Eagles. And those were given to us by CAPIO, which is the California Association of Public Information Officials. Upcoming awards. So we're working with the city of Tustin on their PFAS treatment dedication. That will be May 22nd at 10 a.m. So we'll have the Tustin mayor, we'll have President Bilodeau, and then top staff from the State Water Resources Control Board. And Sean McGuire, board member of the state board, is also attending, as well as a few other senior staff from the state board. Our webinar, our Orange County Water District webinar, is going to be hosted on May 29th, and we're partnering with Mesa Water District on this webinar and just talking about how locally we plan for an abundant and reliable water future and kind of how we do that. And then we are also working with IRWD, hopefully to host a dedication event for their PFAS plant in June or July. We don't yet have a date set, but we'll reach out as soon as we do. And with that, that ends my report, unless there are any questions.
Any questions, comments? No. Seeing none? Anything? Anybody on Zoom? Okay, director's announcements. Oh, Chair direction as to which items. Okay, that's done. Do we need the report? I guess the report. Did we do the report for the outreach, public affairs outreach last night? Since I was not attending last night's meeting, board meeting.
Yeah, we only do that report at this committee meeting.
Okay. If that's the case, then I'll recommend that we agendize that for the next board meeting.
Okay.
Do we need a vote on this? A motion
on the water festival at the board.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Did we do the water fest? I thought we did, but apparently not. Okay, both the water festival and the outreach report. I'll move that we agendize it for the next board meeting.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Please call the roll.
We don't need any action.
Okay, we don't need. Okay. All right. It's to my discretion. That's fine. Director's announcements, reports.
Yep. Chair Tran, I wanted to emphasize, I toured the Mesa Water District, and I asked staff to kind of put some slides together on the education center that they have. And they did a really good job of describing what Mesa Water does and their aquifer that they have. And they have this amber water that they pull up and they treat on site. But they have a really good walkthrough. It talks about the groundwater basin for us. It talks about water in general. It's a great opportunity for especially fifth graders to come over and learn. So I really want to encourage our directors to go over there and take a look. And when I was taking a look, there were some thoughts, perhaps we can pull from what they are doing there and emulate that at our GWRS facility. And it's getting a little dated on our tours and stale. So I'd like to have us either, start a process, and I'm new here, so I don't know how that works, but, maybe forming some type of ad hoc committee or some type of discussion within us internally to say, can we take anything that they're doing here at Mesa and create something similar to the GWRS tour? And, we can, discuss costs at that. We can discuss what we want to do. We can have tours on some of the directors who are newer. I don't know if Director Jung has seen the GWRS tour recently or any of us have seen it entirely recently. But just kind of take what they're doing here at Mesa and then use that as a reference point in our mind and then do a tour over GWRS and say, hey, maybe there's some area for improvement. And, we all want to focus on costs and what we do, but we also understand that GWRS is really this a modern marvel that we want to showcase to the rest of the world. And we do that so well, but having a few extra additional touch points and explanations. And when we bring in schools tour, it really gives us an opportunity to showcase OCWD. So, I don't know if staff is an ad hoc. Is it just?
Director Weigand, I mean, you're on point there. Speaking of which, I know that a couple months ago, the staff did mention about upgrading or refurbishing the tours or some of the exhibits and what have you. Wonder where we are with that in terms of progress. And the budget was supposed to come back with the updates as well. So do we have any updates or progress with renovating the tours and what have you?
Yeah, we were going to initiate that, Director Tran, with a visit to the Mesa Center. But then we were unable to get any directors to go except for Director Weigand. So we need to kind of restart that process. And to come up with some ideas and what the cost of the ideas are.
Also, there are some other agencies who have some really good, Michael Moore's agents, how they bring the outdoors inside. That is fabulous.
Yeah.
Some of the other districts I've been to, they have some really amazing things. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure.
Mace is really close, and the staff has agreed to meet any of us at any time.
One directors. Why did you do that? But I'm saying, I don't think we should limit ourselves to just...
Just Mesa.
I think there are just so many other ones that have some really...
It was just the newest and latest and greatest and convenient. That was the only reason why I suggested it.
But you're right. I don't know how the board wants to move forward, but when an ad hoc committee was formed previously for the hallway, for the visitor center, that was done kind of benchmarking, right, of other facilities. And so it was that kind of subgroup of the board that kind of focused with staff working on that. So I don't know how you want to move forward.
Does the staff, would they need to put together an agenda item to discuss an ad hoc, or is that something we would obviously Brown Act, I would think we'd have to like discuss it.
Yeah, I think just Director Bilodeau has the power to appoint an
agenda. I just have one simple request. If Gina can come up with a Sphere experience just like in Vegas, that would be great.
That's right. Whoever might be interested should probably contact Director Bilodeau, and maybe at the next board meeting we can officially create it.
Right. I thought, you know, a few months ago when the staff brought this up, I thought we were rolling with it already, or at least heading that way. But so are we waiting to formalize this with a board meeting to move it forward?
I think I'm kind of pushing the envelope here, Chair Tran, just to kind of say, hey, I went over to Mesa. I think it's a cool thing. We could emulate that at GWS. Maybe a couple directors might be interested in that. Maybe we can just, you know, go ahead and create an ad hoc. And then after that's formed, those members can then go over to Mesa and kind of initiate kind of the discussion. Look, there's no huge rush on this. It's not timely that we have to be on an urgent basis, but you know, I think we can kind of start the initial discussion on it and kind of see what we would think is appropriate for this district to do.
Chair Tran, and if I may add too, you're right. We did bring this in a CommLodge presentation. We were kind of just giving board an informational update that we were aware that Mesa Water is coming on board, that we've been looking at others, that we know, as Director Wagon said, our tour route is a little bit stale and we wanted to upgrade it. So we have been exploring that. But what we really need is kind of the board's direction on, you know, how much we would spend, what that would look like, how big we would go.
Have you looked at other places? Do you have suggestions of things that you think we could really incorporate and do well with?
We do.
Yeah, another one's the Water Replenishment District.
Yeah, the Albert Robles Learning
Center. That's pretty close.
Yeah.
And then we have a vendor who they were in, what city are they?
Orange, the city of Orange.
That's close. They had neat ideas in their shop. So there's a few places we could go and see.
I know is a little distance, but even some of the picture.
John's right. We went and visited, Joan and I and other staff, the Orange office. We also have visited the Albert Robles Center, Mesa's. And also talked with the water reuse kind of group on other projects and what they're using. And then OC Sand, they used HDR, I think, for, you know, they have a little bit of an educational element in their lobby. So HDR reached out to me. We've also talked with our project consultant with Mayhol, who worked on the GWS. What is his name? Jeff Neiman. Who's he from?
Black and Beach.
About do they have the type of support, you know, to bring in and help since they worked on the project. So I do think there are a couple different ways that we could go. And if it was the board's pleasure, we do have vendors and consultants that do want to give money to help us make this better as well.
That's great. Yeah. I mean, each station could be sponsored by a vendor.
Yeah.
Yeah. When was the last time we refurbish our tour or did changes? When was that?
Around 2015, 2016. You know, it's been about 10 years.
Okay. Yeah. 10 years.
So when we started looking at the hallway, like that technology and stuff, that's really kind of 2013, 2014. I think we had a formal dedication in 2016. So it's been a while.
Okay. Very well. All right. We'll talk more about that.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Director Reagan. General Manager's announcement.
Nothing to announce.
Okay. Nothing to announce. And that brings us to the conclusion, adjournment. So I move to adjourn. Thank you so much. Have a good day, everybody.
You too.
Thanks, Ben.
All right. Bye-bye.